welcome to Dion's Gaffer Tapes with me, Dion Dublin, the podcast series that sits down, locks the door and gets the real stories from some of the UK's most colourful and distinguished football managers. And if that's not enough, thanks to our friends at Beer 52, you could even get a case of their beer delivered to your door while listening to this podcast. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on. So every week we welcome a different guest into the studio, and this week I'm very, very happy to be welcoming my old gaffer from my Villa playing days, Mr. John Gregory. John, thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time.
Always good to hear and see you.
I want to talk about your football career because I'm not sure many people know about it, where you started, where you finished, how long you played for. Where did you start your football career?
Northampton. I went there as a kid. They'd just lost 8-2 to Manchester United when Georgie Best scored six. And I was 15 years old, and I signed for them as an apprentice, you know, like YTS boy. Mm-hmm. And I did my apprenticeship there. And in those days, I mean, I just presumed that I was going to play for them forever. You know, I had no aspirations about playing in the top league, in the first division, in the Premier League, because I was so naive, really. I just presumed that, you know, once you signed to someone like Northampton, that was it. You were going to be stuck there forever. And I played with Phil Neal.
Oh, wow.
He's a Northampton boy. We played with each other in the first team for a few years. And then I came in one Monday morning and I was asking where Phil was, and they said, oh, he's gone to Liverpool. So I said, what's he gone there for? I had no idea. And they said, no, he's gone there to sign for Liverpool. And he went straight into their first team. And then I suddenly woke up, you know, I suddenly realised that if I get my act together and work hard, that I might get a chance maybe one day to go and play in the big league, you know.
How long were you at Northampton for, and where did you go from Northampton? Did you go straight to QPR?
No, I went to Villa.
Oh, it's Villa first.
I went to Aston Villa in 1977. Ron Saunders signed me, and I went for about 35 grand, I think the transfer fee was. But they doubled my salary. I was on £50 a week at Northampton. I was married. I had a little baby daughter, Louisa, and he doubled my salary to £100 a week. Well, it was, in those days, it was like winning the lottery, you know.
How long was your career anyway? How long did you play for?
I played for the best part of 20 years. I started on my first day at Northampton was on July the 1st, 1970. And that obviously I was a YTS boy. I didn't get in the first team until I was 18. But then I played up until I was 33. And to be honest, I wanted to go into coaching. And I kind of wanted to get into coaching as a young man. As opposed to sort of waiting until I was in sort of late 30s to go into the coaching side. So I kind of quit pretty young in that respect.
Did you know, Gaffer, when you was playing the game, was that a burning desire? I want to be a boss. I want to be a coach.
No. I went to QPR in 1981, and I'd been a pro for about 7 or 8 years. And I signed for QPR. Terry Venables was the manager, head coach. And I suddenly realised I'd never been coached before. Because I worked with him, honestly, I worked with him on the training ground. And he was just unbelievable. He was...
Why was he so different?
The usual sort of thing in those days was you'd come out, the assistant manager would run you around the pitch six times to warm you up, and then it was 11v11, and then you kicked lumps out of each other for 45 minutes, and then you went in and you had a cup of tea and a fag.
That, to be fair, I could miss out a load of chapters now and go, well, that was what your dressing room was like.
Yes, exactly. No, it's true. No, but... So suddenly this man was teaching me all these things on the training field, and we were doing training sessions that I'd never experienced before. And I swear to God, I'd drive in the morning, you drive in into the car park, you look out on the training field, and Venables would be out there putting out the the cones and poles and God knows what else, and all, getting all the footballs ready. And you would get excited because you didn't know what was coming next. You were so excited about his training sessions that were about to happen. And you went out and it was something different. He'd never done it before. And basically for the first 3 months, it was like a new training session every day.
Did you feel like he was making you a better player, a different player? How did you change? What did you take from him?
Totally that. He taught me, as a midfield player, he taught me how to get the ball off the goalkeeper or how to get the ball off the back four. And just all these little routines. With the rest of the team, you know, he'd set the team up and he did all these different moves and had players. And as I said, as a midfield player, he taught me how to get the ball off the back four. Because in those days, most of the time, the goalkeeper just used to smash the ball down the other end of the pitch, as you well know.
That was my game. That was my game. Get it to me as quick as possible.
That was at Cambridge United, wasn't it? That's another story. But no, he was just so exciting. Every day was so exciting. And I couldn't wait to get to work every day. He actually influenced the whole of our team. We had the plastic pitch, if you remember, in 1981. We put on the AstroTurf and we could play on that. We all had good touch. And we had a pure football team. We got to the FA Cup final the first year we were there, and we were still a second division team, the championship team. We got to the FA Cup final where we got beat by Tottenham in a replay. And then next season we won the championship by 10 points. Wow. Under Venables. And our first year sort of back in the Premiership as such with QPR, we finished fifth in the league.
Wow. It was
our first season back in top flight. And then we lost Venables. Venables went to Barcelona.
Did it all go pear-shaped then after Mr. Venables left?
It did go a little bit downhill after that. He went to La Liga.
Yep.
And Barcelona never won. They hadn't won La Liga for 10 seasons. 10.
Until he went.
And Venables went in his first year. They won the league.
See, that's incredible.
And he was amazing. That says it all about him, really.
Well, it does. And I spoke to a lot of players about Mr. Venables. And to speak to another manager... Yeah, albeit you were a player for him, but to speak to another manager now that I had as a manager, for you to say that about him, everything I've heard obviously is ringing true. So as a manager at Villa, when I played underneath you, was I half being coached by Venables? Did you take a lot from him?
I always said that under Terry Venables, if you wanted to be a coach, you just had to have a good memory. Because I when I trained under Terry, each day... He sat with me one day. We were talking about, he said, what are you going to do when you finish and all this? I was only 27 at the time. And he said, have you got any thoughts about coaching? And I said, yeah, maybe, you know. And he said, well, you should start now. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you start now. He said, write down things in an exercise book. If you see things or if you go to matches and things that catch your eye, write it down and remember it. And he said, when you suddenly then want to be a coach, you'll have a backup. You'll have a manual of some description. So I started writing down all his sessions. Every session that he did, I've still got them to this day, believe it or not. I'm sure, yes, during your time, our time together, you would have done one or two of Terry Venables' sessions that I kept all those years and remembered them.
That's a massive sign of respect, that, isn't it?
Yeah,
knowing full well, you've taken on board so much from a very good coach and made yourself better.
I mean, you say about me, my thoughts on coaching, I then started to write stuff down and I started to plan for the future. And that's why I said when I got to 33, I was happy just to quit and get into coaching. I was ready to make the transformation as such.
So Gaffer, that's the coaching side of things. But just before we talk about the players, I must say thank you to our sponsors, Beer 52. Now, I do like a craft beer, and Beer 52 are on a mission to find the world's finest beers. Every month they select beers from small breweries all over the world and send them out to their members. Now they have over 150,000 members who all rate the beers every month. And this month, I've been allowed to put together a crate of 8 of the highest rated beers for you guys to try free. All you have to do is go to the website and cover the cost of the postage, which is £5.95, and you'll get this crate worth 24 quid delivered to your door. There's no minimum commitment, and you can just try the beers, see what you think. If it's not for you, then you just press pause or cancel at any time. So if you fancy a free crate of fine craft beers, then go to beer52.com/Dion and check it out. That is spelt beer52.com. Now back to my old gaffer, Mr. John Gregory. You at Aston Villa, managing some of the, how can I put this, personalities, I'll put it nicely, personalities that you had to deal with. Gaffer, we had some big, big names, big characters. How did you deal with it?
Obviously, I've been there as a coach with Brian Little as a manager. I've been his coach. And I left, I went to Wickham for 16 months and I was my own man there. I was a manager there. So I got in the habit of being able to deal on a daily basis with a squad of players, you know, with 20 odd players, and having to negotiate contracts with them and all that kind of stuff. So I had a good taste of it, but obviously going back into Villa, I knew everybody. When I went back, every player was the same as when I left 16 months ago. So I knew them. I knew their wives, their children. I knew their mum and dads, and I just knew everybody there. And the only one that wasn't there when I was there was Stan Collymore. And obviously, I know that Brian had had a lot of problems with Stan, and he was the only player that was different than when I'd been there before. So everybody knew me, I knew them. We just sort of picked up where we left off 16 months ago, to be honest. But yeah, there was suddenly, it was a lot different dealing with players in the Premier League than what it was with Wickham, obviously in League One. It was slightly different. Lots of big personalities to deal with on a daily basis. And if things were difficult, then I went and signed Merce.
Yes, yes. Do you just deal with difficult characters simply, or did you have to learn it?
Paul actually wasn't a problem at all. He had a lot of demons. He had a lot of things going on in his life away from the football club. But when he used to come into the club, he was in my office most days of the week, to be honest.
Yeah.
He'd come in and he'd just say, oh, what are we doing today? Are we training tomorrow? What's going on? This, that and the other. Wanted to sort of know what's going on. And I didn't find that a problem. And then he'd say to me, Gaffer, on Monday, one of his boys was in a school play or something, and he still lived in London. And it was like, do you mind if I go to his school play instead of coming in? And I say, yeah, no problem. Because more often than not, on a match day, he'd be one of my best players. He would win matches for us on his own. He was an outstanding footballer. He had a great spell when he was with us at Villa. And to be honest, I used to basically allow him to do whatever he wanted to do, providing he didn't upset the rest of the group and providing that he didn't take the mickey, you know, and abuse the privilege. And to be fair, he was great. I remember he moaned. I've seen him a few times since. We used to come in on Sunday, as you know, for a warm down. And he'd have to come all the way up from London for a
sulking.
He used to hate me for that. But I used to say, you know, move closer, Phyllis Nelson.
That's a trust thing, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, you can't be best friends, but there has to be an element of trust. Is that why you gave us so much leeway?
I think so, because ultimately, the big money deal at that particular time, as you know, we were paying around 20 grand a week, 30 grand a week, big money. And I used to say to players, you know, if you play for 5 years, you could earn £2 million a year for the next 5 years. You know, you're a mug if you're going to mess it up.
Yeah.
If you don't give it your best, you know, after this contract's finished, your next contract will be even bigger. And maybe a bigger club will come and take you away from Aston Villa. You know, that could happen. And you're a mug if you mess it up. So I really used to sort of put the responsibility back to players. And to be honest, mate, as you well know, at that particular time, we had a good squad of players. And they were all grafters. They were all hard workers. And to be honest, I don't remember anybody really at that particular time that left our club to go to a better club.
Mm.
Yorkie might be the odd exception. That was very early on in my tenure.
But Yorkie's replacement was outstanding.
He was. I managed to get you and Merce for the price that we sold Yorkie. We sold Yorkie, we got 12.5 million. And we managed to get you two guys. in for that money. And mate, I'm just going to tell you now. I saw a collection of your goals the other day. It was on Twitter, I think it was. Uh-huh. 10 of your best goals, mate. And listen, I'm going to tell you now to your face, they were amazing, unbelievable. I mean, you scored two in your first game against Tottenham, and had one disallowed that was not offside.
Yeah.
But was given as offside. And then the next week we went down to Southampton and you scored a hat-trick.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you scored 7 goals, I think, in the first 4 games, I think, something like that. But, yeah. Mate, yeah, I mean, listen, I had good footballers, had a group of very, very good footballers at that particular time. And, you know, I was very fortunate to be in charge of that group of boys. And we just used to let them go, yeah, we just used to... Be very easy with them, very relaxed with them, and I think I tried to show as much trust in them as I could, and you just hope that you get the same trust back.
Who was the most difficult?
Well, Stan, obviously, Stanley Victor Collymore. I mean, I've gone on record as saying he was probably the most talented footballer I ever worked with. The most talented. And in my first game was Liverpool at home, one of his former clubs. He joined us from Liverpool, and we played Liverpool at home, my first game at Villa Park, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen? Stan was unbelievable. He chased everybody over the... He chased back passes. He chased fullbacks into the opposition's half. He worked his nuts off. He scored both goals. We won 2. We were 1-0 down. He scored 2 goals. We won 2-1, and he was the hero. And on the Tuesday night, we played Atletico Madrid in Madrid, in the UEFA Cup quarterfinal first leg, and I took him off after 55 minutes because he didn't move an inch. And I couldn't understand it, how I just got two incredibly opposite performances from him. And I was shocked, and suddenly it became a big problem. And I was dealing with Stan, you know, every morning, 9 o'clock, phone would go, and it would be Stanley related. And I found, you know, I had 20 pros at the time, and 19 other pros needed some of my time and attention.
Is that Stanley-related phone calls with problems to do with Stan?
Not just media. Just media all the time wanted to ask questions, and it was always about Stan. It was always Stan-related. Or you took Stan off after 55 minutes. Why did you take him off? Why this? Why that? Why Stan this? Why Stan that? And it was always, you know, it wasn't about any other player. It tended not to be about any other player. It was all about Stan, because Stan was a newsworthy item. Mm. And then, of course, I joined in February 98, and in June 98, there was the infamous problem with Stan in Paris, when he got, in a lot of problems. And that was my fault. You know, the media basically blamed me. So you're asking earlier about the role of a manager. You know, that suddenly became my problem. He's one of my players, correct. Did you know he was in Paris? No, of course not. We allow, once the season's over, all our players are allowed to go and do whatever they want. So suddenly I was dealing with that. And all of this kind of took a little bit of the gloss. We actually qualified for UEFA Cup that season. We finished in 6th position in the league. I joined them when we were 17th, and we finished 6th in the league and qualified for UEFA Cup. And then, obviously, this problem came up. And that's then becomes part of the manager's duties to deal with things like that every day. And that really answers your question in many respects, Dion, about, you know, having to manage a group of players. And unfortunately, you know, it stayed with us for the next 12 months, basically.
Does it surprise you where the players that you managed have ended up? For instance, I still call him the skipper, Gareth Southgate. Are you surprised he's England manager?
No, not at all. He wanted everything done correctly. When I was there as the assistant to Brian, I used to call him Model, because he was a Model pro. Mm. He was always on time. He did everything properly. I don't know if you remember, in the old days, we used to have like pigeonholes for all the fan mail. Well, Gareth would get like, he'd get like 20 or 30 letters a week, and he'd answer all of them. Every single letter he would send back, he would send back something. He'd read the letter and send it back. Other players would pick up their letters and just chuck them in the waste bin, not even bother. But that was Gareth. And he was a student, you know, he would occasionally ask things. He was captain, of course, as well. So he had every right to wanting things done properly. And he was just a great player to work with. And I've seen him, as I said, I saw him one night and he said, oh, I must have been a nightmare as a player. And I said, no, I said, you wasn't. What made you? He said, well, because I just wanted everything done just so. And I said, no. I said, you were one of the few that wanted everything just perfect. He didn't like the music in the dressing room. I don't know if you know that.
No. Not, to be fair, neither did Merce, because I remember Merce leaving the dressing room one day. I remember it might have been Darius or Lee Hendry or Gareth Barry, one of the young boys, because they had their own little clique. They'd put the music on, it'd be a bit of R&B, bit of hip-hop, and Merce walked out the dressing room, and I remember the system was just by the door, and he actually stood on it. He stood on it. He just crushed it as if to say, I don't want this in my dressing room. And I think Gareth Southgate had a bit of a wry smile.
Yeah. He didn't like, he wouldn't have the music. One or two of the players asked if they could have it in there. And I said, well, you know, we'll try it. We'll give it a test. Obviously, if we have some music in there and we win, we'll have music again next week.
Absolutely.
But no, it didn't surprise me, him going into management at all.
Gaffer, what were your highs? What was your high while you were at Villa? What was the thing that made you go, you know what, we've done all right?
Listen, we didn't have anything to show for it. We won the Intertoto Cup, which is, yeah, you know, not. I mean, it was something.
Absolutely.
But nevertheless, it was the FA Cup still haunts me. The final still haunts me. That I wasn't more adventurous. I think
we were terrible, weren't we?
Yeah, we didn't turn up on the day. We didn't turn up really for the semi-final, but we managed to get through it, as you know. During that time, I think you worry that each season went by, you basically had nothing to show for it, than possibly a UEFA Cup position.
Do you have any regrets with any of the players that you managed, or regrets as a manager while you were at Villa at all? Anything?
Yeah, with Stan, we've had lots of discussion since. I wanted to get the best out of him. And I thought I cracked it the first match, but then it didn't happen that often afterwards. And I had big regrets over maybe I should have spent a little bit more time in really getting to the bottom of his problems that he had. But as you know, I had another 20 players that all needed the same attention, you know, and it's sometimes difficult. And Bobby Robson taught me a saying many, many years ago. He said to me, John, if ever you get a problem in your football club, get it out and let it be somebody else's problem.
Really?
And to be honest, you know, there is a little bit of that stayed with me. And the day Stan left, he went to Leicester and he went out the door, and I just said, I remember saying to him, now go and ram my words down my throat. Mm. Go to Leicester and be a superstar. Go and do what we all know that you're good at. I'd love you to go there and score 30 goals for the rest of the season and be player of the year or something. I mean, I would that. I genuinely wanted him to do that because he had so much talent that he wasn't showing it often enough. But yeah, I mean, Stan was a bit of a regret. But other than that, no, I think I didn't really have that many regrets. The biggest regret I've got is resigning.
Really?
I resigned in January 2002.
What was the main reason behind that? Tell me why you did that, boss.
Muzzy, is it? It was October, the last Saturday in October. We were at home to Bolton and we were 1-0 down. And we scored two goals late in the second half to win 2-1. And we were top of the Premiership. We were back to the top of the Premiership, and I went in to see Doug on the Monday, and Leicester were in 3-4. Martin O'Neill had gone to Celtic, and Leicester were in turmoil. Peter Taylor's gone in there. I think he might have been caretaker manager or something. Leicester were in the bottom three. all hell was breaking loose over there. Everyone was unhappy. Everybody wanted to leave. I knew Muzzy Izzik quite well, and I got in touch with him. He wanted to come to Villa. I went in to see Doug on the Monday. I said, listen, we're top of the league. I want to buy Muzzy Izzik. And he said to me, you don't need any more players, John, because we're top of the league. Why do you need any more players? Why do you need any more players? We're top of the league. We don't need any more players. I said, no, come on. If we're going to stay there, we need to build now while we're strong. Anyway, I wanted Muzzy. He was going to cost 5 million quid. And wow. Doug said to me, how much money, how much a week would he want? I said, well, I think he's on about 15 now. He'll want 20. And £20,000 a week. So anyway, he said, so I said, listen, it'd be great in this club. He can play anywhere across the midfield, play up front, play off the front man, play out wide. He'd play anywhere for us. It'd be a great signing. So he said, okay. He said, if we signed him today, where would you play him Saturday? And I said, I'd sit him on the bench. He said, what, you pay 5 million for him and sit him on the bench? Are you crazy? And I said, no. I said, but the other 11 that are on the field will play out of their skin.
Absolutely. Knowing full well, there's a new signing on the bench.
There's a new signing ready to come on to take their shirt. And he said, anyway, after half an hour of talk, he said no. Now, I'd been there 3 years. He'd never said no to me before. And he said, no, we can't afford it. You've spent too much money already, et cetera, et cetera. And at the time, I don't know if you remember, Leeds got into big financial problems.
Yeah, I do.
And he kept saying to me, John, you've seen what's happened at Leeds. You know, they're up to their neck in debt and this, that and the other. And that's never going to happen at this club. Anyway, he said no. And I thought, he killed me. He really killed me. Next week, we went to Newcastle. We lost 3-0. I think Hugo Ekiog got kicked in the face by Shearer.
That's right. That's
and right. He was out. He was going to be out for at least 6 months. And suddenly things weren't going too good. And I just felt that the ambition that Manchester United had, that Arsenal had, that Liverpool had, I didn't think we matched their ambition. And I just thought, I'm working my nuts off here, left, right and centre. We've just gone top of the league. And my chairman doesn't want to invest any money to get us into the Champions League. And literally from that day, I felt I wanted to get out.
Is that one of the things that just stays with you?
Yeah, I can remember saying to my wife, whilst everything was great at Villa, I can remember saying to Michelle that, you know, after Villa, it's all downhill. I did. I can remember saying that to her. I can remember saying, you know, after Villa, if I ever left Villa, it's all downhill. Because this is, for me, this is like the biggest club in the country, for me,
yes.
that I'm ever likely to be in charge of. You know, I'm not going to be manager of Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, but, you know, I'm manager of Villa. It will never get any better. It's all downhill after we leave there. And it was, and it has been.
How do you think people would class you as a manager? What would they say your style of management was? And, you know, how would you like to be known as, you know?
I'd like to think that I gave my heart and soul whilst I was there without any question. I gave everything to it. I threw myself into the job. And it used to hurt me when people didn't recognise. I mean, you were there during the time when we were top of the league. You know, no one ever, we were top of the league and no one even mentioned us.
No, they didn't.
Oh, Manchester United have gone up to second and Chelsea have dropped down to fourth. Arsenal are now tucked away in third place. And that was it. And then they went on to something else. They didn't even mention that we were actually top. No one really took us seriously. And I think that used to irritate me somewhat. But no, I mean, listen, I look back on it with enormous pride that during my time there, we had a decent run of results for nearly 4 years. And, you know, I still go back occasionally and I still have a good rapport with the Villa faithful. And obviously, I continue to be a fan like you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is purely a hypothetical question. I've gone into Homes Under the Hammer. I'm enjoying my presenting and all that stuff, and I've gone into a different direction completely.
Yes.
What advice would you give me if I wanted to go into management?
Go Doncaster Rovers or Peterborough United or one of the teams maybe in League One or League Two.
Yeah.
And just spend 12 months, 2 years, whatever you need to do as an assistant, as a coach, and just go in there and just see how it's done. Just learn all about it. Dion, there's so many players that finish playing. Yes, they go on all the coaches' courses.
Yeah.
They go and get their full badge, their full license, and they go and get everything else. But there's nothing like kind of putting, and you're not putting your whole reputation on the line because you're just a member of staff.
Yeah.
You're not the manager. There's so many players that go in as a manager and fail, and they get their fingers burnt, and then they also, other chairmen and owners up and down the country, don't take them a second time. And I'll tell you who are very good at it. The Dutch are very good at this. A lot of the great Dutch international players that you have known, probably played against over the years, they go and coach the under-16s in Ajax or the under-17s in Ajax or in Eindhoven, PSV or somewhere like that, and just learn your trade. That's why I worked alongside Brian Little at Leicester City.
Yeah.
And we had 3 years there together before we went off to Villa. And I just watched him and listened to how he worked. And I used to go home on a Friday night. This is a true story. I used to go home on a Friday night. We always used to play on a Saturday in those days. But I'd go home on a Friday night. I didn't even know what the team was the next day. Because, quite frankly, I didn't care.
Yeah.
It wasn't my responsibility. And obviously, if we didn't play well on a Saturday, it hurt me as much as it hurt Brian. But nevertheless, I didn't have the worry of players knocking on my door, asking me why didn't I play Saturday? Why did you take me off after 25 minutes? Why did you do this? Why didn't you do that? Why aren't I playing? Why wasn't I involved in your training session this morning? You know, and all these questions, you get it as a manager. And as an assistant manager, it was a great way for me to learn my trade, basically. So I think that's major important. Anyone that wants to go into coaching, seriously, just go to the lower division club.
Yeah.
Learn your trade for a couple of years. See how it all works. See what happens.
What you've just said there, you're finding out what to do and what not to do
without it being your responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. But on that note, and the managers that you've mentioned, Gaffer, through this whole chat, if I could put you on the spot and I'd say, right, pick four managers that you had to invite to dinner, dead or alive, who would they be?
Arthur Cox.
Why?
Arthur Cox was a brilliant psychologist. He could kill you with one sentence. He walked into a dressing room once, right? And I've sat in the corner. He walked into the dressing room on a Monday morning. We played Saturday. He walked in on a Monday morning. And we had a striker called Bobby Davison. And he said to Bobby Davison, in front of all the players, "Morning, Bobby. How are you today?" He said, "Oh, I'm great, Gaffer." And he said, "You bloody weren't on Saturday." And then just walked out the room. And he also did it to me one night at Leicester. I was at Leicester as the assistant to Brian Little. And Arthur Cox was manager of Derby County, big Midlands derby match. And he walked in the entrance. I waited for him at the entrance to Filbert Street. And as he'd come in with all his players, he'd come up to me, pointed his finger, and he said, "I just hope," in front of everybody in reception, "I just hope that my players want to beat you as much as I want to beat you. Because if they want to beat you as much as I want to beat you, you're in for a thrashing tonight." And then... And then just carried on walking. And I later found out he walked straight in the dressing room and just started laughing.
Oh, okay. So he had a good sense of humour. So you've got Arthur Cox at the table. You've got three more to pick.
Terry Venables, obviously.
Gotcha. Yeah. One of your idols.
Brian Clough.
Wow. That'd be lively.
I would say Brian Clough, to me, is the greatest manager of all time.
That's a massive statement, boss, considering the managers that you know.
For many, many reasons, but just not a lot of money. He didn't use a, he didn't spend a huge amount of money on transfers, and he took over Derby County when they were bottom of the second division, bottom of the championship, and literally within 3 years they won the Premier League basically. Wow. I mean, stunning. I mean, listen, he messed up a couple of times, but then he went off to, and then he ended up at Forest, and they won the Champions League twice on the trot with a team of old men. You know? Incredible. I mean, the record's there for it. I mean, just amazing.
Okay, so you've got Arthur Cox, Terry Venables, Brian Clough.
And Sir Alex.
Now, I'm going to let you go, Gaff. I've kept you for far too long anyway, but I just want to ask you this thing. I can see a lot of similarities having been managed by Sir Alex and you. If I could give you a microphone and I could stand you in the centre of Villa Park and it was full with 46,000 people, what would you say to the fans about your time and about them?
What would I say to them? I can remember that first game against Liverpool. I'd obviously gone off to Wickham. Mm-hmm. When I was at Villa, working alongside Brian, I was like a nobody. I was, always in the background and away from things. Brian was the manager, and I went off to Wickham, come back obviously as a manager. And I knew, like 2 days before I got appointed, there was in the newspaper, they had the top 10 potential managers for Aston Villa. Okay. I mean, I wasn't even.
Were you not in the top 10?
I probably wasn't even in the top 50. I wasn't really. There was all these names, you know, big managerial stars in their own right. Ronald Koeman, people like that. Rud Hullett, I think, was another one. There was lots of managers. Anyway, and on the Saturday, we obviously, kicking off 3 o'clock, Villa Park, I come out of the tunnel, walk down the side to go to my seat, and I kind of expected there might be a sort of a lame clap, you know. Oh, well, it's...
Yeah, yeah.
What's that bloke's name again? You know, I'm kind of thinking they wouldn't even know who I was. And to be honest, I got like a standing ovation going to my seat. And it was just like, you're our manager and we're behind you 100%. So let's go. Yeah. We love you. We already love you. No matter what happens, we already love you. So, I'd obviously had a little bit of history being a player there and a coach. So I wasn't completely unknown to everybody. But, so to stand up in front of them, I think they supported me from that first day. And really, that's really what I would say to them, that, you know, literally from day one, they gave me incredible backing, incredible support. And to this day, they're still the same. And so I just basically thanked them for looking after me for those 4 years. And I'd have to apologise for 2000 Cup Final.
On that note, that's about it for this episode of Dion's Gaffer Tapes. Huge thanks to my guest, Mr. John Gregory, or I should call him Gaffer. John, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for today.
You're welcome, mate. Great to talk to you.
Thanks again to our sponsors, Beer 52, who have let me put a special case of 8 of my favourite craft beers together, which you can try for free. All you have to do is cover the postage, which is £5.95, and they'll get those lovely craft beers to your door. All the details are online at beer52.com/Dion. That's beer52.com/Dion. And they've also stuck in a snack and a copy of Ferment magazine for every case. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me by messaging me on my socials. And if you've liked what you've heard, please make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Share it with your pals. And if you've really liked it, give it a 5-star rating. Thanks very much for listening, and I will see you next time. Goodbye for now.